98.7 FM and online at kbu.fm. The Struggle is where organizers and activists doing good in the community come to discuss their work, to get you to support them, maybe even join them. Remember The Struggle. Every Friday, 7 to 8 p.m., KBU Community Radio.
KBU proudly co-sponsors the Portland Folk Music Society concert series, featuring artists touring nationally and internationally. Shows start this September with Jim Queskin and Meredith Axelrod. The new season continues with artists Bill Staines, Radim Zenkel, and the Honey Whiskey Trio. Then 2020 kicks off with Kate Lee and Forrest O'Connor, followed by Sam Ryder and the Human Hands, Robin and Linda Williams, Pat Donahue, and Joni Harms. Portland Folk Music Society concerts are presented at the Reedwood Friends Church on Southeast Steel Street in Portland. For more information, go to the website kboo.fm and click on Community Events.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, and the Radio Activists is up next. They're running a little bit late, but so Paul and I are going to probably continue here. So that was a really good show this morning. I enjoyed the last point Mark brought up about community land trusts. There's a community in Boston that you should look up that definitely does that, where it's a collective. The property is owned by that collective, and they're responsible for the maintenance and provisions in that neighborhood. So not all neighborhood associations are, to quote Hunter S. Thompson, outback Nazi law enforcement agencies.
So wait a second, that land trust was connected to a neighborhood association?
Yeah, so it's in Boston. If you look up a Nation article called Three Ways to Get Rid of Your Landlord, they bring up that Boston case, and it was an area that of Boston, I forget what, I haven't read about it in a while. It's been a while since it was about 2 years ago I read about it for city planning class that I had, but basically it took activists maybe 15 years to get that set up. And they were going to gentrify the neighborhood. It's the usual markers where you have a luxury hotel and I forget if there's a convention center expansion proposed, but it wouldn't surprise me. And then the community actually took that back and they're like, no, we're going to make this community land trust and preserve our community. It's a neighborhood just outside of Boston.
Huh. No, I thought that. I remember I live in the Montevilla neighborhood. I remember a couple of years ago when there's a big, you probably remember that, there was a big flap over, there's some people who got elected to the neighborhood association who were, took a position against the houseless people, the sweeping, which I hate that term, but the evicting of people from, wherever they had their tents or shelters or whatever. And there's kind of I knew some of those people, and there is an attempt to sort of, actually use the neighborhood association to address those kind of sort of structural, local issues. But I always thought how do we actually, you already, if you have people organized together to some extent, how do you use that to sort of get a virtuous circle as opposed to a vicious cycle and actually pool the resources together? And a community land trust is a great way to pool resources. And it seems, why is it so difficult for us? I've thought that I'd like to get a community, some kind of community center going out in my neighborhood, some kind of, I don't really like the bar scene. I'd like to get some sort of, like the Red and Black Cafe used to be there on Southeast 12th. It seems like there should be those kind of things in every neighborhood, at least two of them in every neighborhood.
Yeah, definitely. We are taking your calls. We're just continuing that just because the next host is, if she's not, or if they're not late, we're not sure where they're at. 503-231-8187. I think we do have a phone caller. You're on the air. And no, not anymore. This is always fun doing live radio.
Especially when you're doing the board too.
Yeah, doing it at the same time. Usually we have a little bit of a lighting situation on one of our telos. So I have to bend over a lot over to another telos and It's why you should donate to KBOO. We have a fund drive coming up.
Telos, so, of course, is the system that allows us to get to put phone calls on the air.
Yeah, I always forget that I'm not talking to engineer folks sometimes. so anyways, the number to chime in on a housing conversation, 503-231-8187. The other thing that doesn't get brought up about housing, and it's definitely part and parcel to it, is every time you improve infrastructure, bicycle infrastructure, green infrastructure, it makes the parcels worth a lot more money, and then you gentrify just by making it more complete streets for users of all disability or ability. Or transportation modes. And so how do you fight back against that? And then the community land trust is definitely a good way to do so.
Indeed. I know there is a organization in Portland that, I don't know how active they are. I know they had a house up in Northeast Portland. They've had a few houses and going on that model, but it takes so much energy just to get, you know, one property transformed to a community land trust.
Yeah, it definitely does. So with bringing up Manson, that was your other topic this morning. Did you see the Quentin Tarantino movie? He Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Does that deal with?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh my God, I missed it.
Yeah, no, it definitely does. There's a lot of controversy around the role that Sharon Tate, or the actress that plays Sharon Tate, does in the movie. I haven't seen it yet. I think Tarantino kind of jumped the shark after Jackie Brown, but that's my personal opinion. But anyways. It looks like we do have another caller on the air, and let's see if we can get him up. You're on the air on KBOO.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, my name is Chris.
Hi, Chris.
And one of the things I've been involved in communes and stuff like that in my former days, and right now I'm working with a bunch of people trying to put together senior co-housing, which is a growing movement, I hear, and now with the open accounting and Bitcoin kind of cyber funding, it's becoming more real. So I think that's, with the growing number of seniors retiring, it's a good avenue for pursuit.
So how does Bitcoin translate into the real, like, dollars? Is there an exchange rate, or how do you do something with senior housing and Bitcoin? That is something I do not know anything about.
Well, just as a method of having open accounting for communal situations.
Oh, I see.
Both of the things break down because of finances, so with Bitcoin type operations and smart contracts, you can eliminate or limit the exposure to such things.
Yeah, because Bitcoin, if for listeners that don't know, Bitcoin has a technology called blockchain, and then you can keep track of your Bitcoin through who's had hands on it through the origins of that, the origination of that Bitcoin. Is that what the purpose of doing Bitcoin is, or?
Well, with blockchains, you can also get involved with what are called smart contracts.
And oh, so, okay.
And the people involved in the contract have open accounting and responsibility.
How does a smart contract, like a digital smart contract, how does that differ from like a regular contract that a lawyer would put together?
Primarily because it's open and distributed. It's not under the control or limited visibility type things you get involved with in such matters, and so. All the parties to the contract have open visibility to every other party on the contract and what their responsibilities are and what their deliverables are and when they're delivered and how they're delivered.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Well, yeah, that's really cool. So is this a senior home in Portland, or where is this at?
Well, it's a group of people from the Oregon Country Fair that are trying to retire peacefully.
Okay. All right. Awesome. Did you have anything else for us, or?
Well, one of the other things that earlier in the show, the CIA is involved in politics and stuff like that. I don't know able to.
Well, I mean, there are conspiracy theory, and I think Paul's book kind of touches on some of them. But there is no conspiracy about the Palmer raids, which the FBI conducted in 1919 that destroyed the IWW. And ever since then, it's been very hard for the left to organize, whether it be COINTELPRO, which happened in the 1960s as well. That's verified. The FBI also assassinated Fred Hampton, the leader of Black Panther movement, in his home. That is not disputed. So we do know of sometimes, we do know have documented cases of the intelligence agencies, including the FBI, intervening in political domestic matters of the United States.
Well, I think it's evolved into a much greater issue since AI is involved. I think they learned how to use demagoguery and religion. I think that was part of the Koresh and Manson family thing to target individuals and turn them into suicide bombers or whatever they need at the time. And so with AI, and Putin has already come out and said those who control AI will control the world.
I'm, and I know this is going to give me a lot of heat, but I'm more on the Glenn Greenwald side of things, where I think, whether or not Putin controlled her election, I'm still not convinced of it. But what I do know is we have an electoral college that is woefully outdated. I do know that we have an electorate that puts being a consumer first and foremost rather than being a citizen. I do know that we have a very disengaged general public that just thinks that, you know, starting a petition on GoFundMe or whatever is going to actually change anything. So there's a lot of conditions that are within our self-control as United States citizens that have nothing to do with Putin, that, and we ended up with Donald Trump.
Well, the thing is that people have cognitive dissonances, and the use of AI to exploit them through social media networking is growing exponentially.
Sure.
And it's effective. You don't have to fool all the people all the time.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't.
People enough of the time.
I don't doubt that it's effective, because there is a study done on Facebook where if Facebook internally did it, and then it got leaked, where Facebook basically showed users all negative stuff, and just to see on their Facebook feed, just to see what the user reaction was, and it went negative. So Facebook can be a negative reinforcer. So we have the host. They are here. We're going to transition out. Thank you for your call. This is KBOO Portland. Thanks for the overtime, Paul. And we're going to transition right now.
Raya, your friendly neighborhood agitator, the host of The Struggle, every Friday from 7 to 8 p.m. Listen to KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM, and online at kboo.fm. The Struggle is where organizers and activists doing good in the community come to discuss their work, to get you to support them, maybe even join them. Remember The Struggle, every Friday, 7 to 8 p.m., KBOO Community Radio.
Good morning, folks. This is Rochelle Dixon with the Radio Activists. Thank you for your patience this morning. So we're going to have a chat. We know that we've had a lot of things in our city that have been a challenge, and we have the far right that has been one of the most significant challenges, along with police brutality, police accountability. And so I want to talk about that, and I want you to call in and tell me what your thoughts are on this issue. The number to call in is 503-231-8187. Again, that number to call in is 503-231-817. So let's talk about pushing back against the alt-right or the far right. And my first question to you is that an appropriate name? Does what we call it matter? To me, that's a significant issue in news reporting, that we're calling it the alt-right and that we're calling it the far right. Is that what we should be calling it? So that's the first question I'm going to pose, and hopefully you have some feedback on that. I think you can probably guess my opinion. My opinion is that maybe we should just call it what it is, and maybe the alt-right isn't a good name for it. Is it an alternative right? Are they fascist? What are they? I've heard some folks call them Nazis. I've heard some people just outright say fascist, but the news reporting is a little different. So that's my first question. Does what we call it matter? The second thing I want to talk about, I mean, I'm going to continue to use the alt-right and the perspective that there is the leftist. Okay, so if what we call it matters on that end, how should we pose the pushback on that? Should it be leftist? Are we all anti-fascist? Are we all leftists? Or should it be Nazis and non-Nazis? Or what does that look like? So I really think the language matters, but you tell me your thoughts. The number is 503-231-8187. So just recently we had an opportunity to explore what would happen if two groups came together and didn't necessarily go with the violent narrative that has been happening in the past. So Portland showed up. They showed out in a much different way than they have in the past. So there was a lot less violence this August, this past 2 weeks ago it was now. And part of that came together as a result of 27 different organizations coming together to counter the protests with the Proud Boys, and the rally was met by a large counter demonstration. So the NAACP participated, the pop mob participated. This time I don't believe there were any cashew milkshakes. So that narrative about a cashew milkshake turning into cement, that didn't happen. What do you think about how things were different this time? I think there were a lot of things that went right this time. And one of them was that Portlanders were able to show up and participate in all the different ways that they felt comfortable. That, to me, was what really went right. I don't think that there was a section of the city that didn't have a way to participate. In the past, I've noticed that it's been younger folks, that it's been able-bodied folks, it's been mostly Caucasians, and this time I noticed that there was a way for folks to get involved, whether they were LGBTQ, whether they were able-bodied, whether they were marginalized or targeted by color, and I appreciated the organizing for that. I do happen to know who organized that. The spokesperson for the mobilization effort is Effie Baum, and at some point I would like to get her on the air and talk to her about her fantastic organizing with that group. And in the meantime, I want to hear your thoughts on what went right. 503-231-8187. In contrast, if you think there are things that could be done better in the future, I'd like to hear your opinion on that. So there's this theory. This theory is that it takes 3.5% of the population, of the entire population of any community, to overturn the norms of the society that need to be changed. So, for example, with the lunch counter protest and the SALT marches and things that have happened in the past that have been nonviolent, as they've been studied, it's been about 3.5% of the population that is the tipping point for that. And the feedback and the understanding that I've gotten when I've asked, okay, why 3.5? I don't think 3.5 is a magic number. That's just been the number that has been closest to what folks are aiming for when they've studied it. But here's the thing. The thing is, in order to succeed in a nonviolent movement, one must have the moral high ground. That's what was discovered in the research concerning pushing back against the narratives of the Nazis, of the British, when we're talking about India and the salt marches, segregation. And why that 3.5% matters is because it's the entire population. It isn't the folks that are necessarily on the front lines. And the challenge has been to get folks who are on the front lines to maybe consider that it needs to be a movement beyond the folks that are extremely passionate about the issue. So people who are looking at the issue from the outside need to have sympathy with the people who are pushing on the issue and pushing for change. So with segregation, it wasn't so much that the lunch counter protest itself were able to change segregation in downtown Tennessee. What happened is the violence against the segregationist, the violence perpetuated by the segregationists against the folks who were on the front lines turned into demonstrating the lack of morality by the segregationists. We do have a caller on the line, so I'm going to go ahead and take that call. If you want to call in, it's 503-231-8187. And caller, you are on the line. Hello, good morning.
Thank you so much. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
I want to let folks know we can make a difference today from 11 to 1 at the Clackamas County Courthouse. It is part of the National Feet to the Fire. Each month, going to different courthouse, demanding accountability of police and district attorneys for killing our loved ones, often Black, Indigenous, Brown, people of color, poor, people's mental health, classes in different languages. So we want to be able to empower ourselves to make that difference. 3.5% of the population can make a revolution. And if we do it nonviolently and we do it in mutual respect with diversity, that revolution lasts and does more good in the process and the end result. So please come to Clackamas County Courthouse. The address of that
is 11 to 1.
7 Main Street, Oregon City, 97045. That's 807 Main Street, Oregon City, zip 97045. Today from 11 to 1. It is part of Feet to the Fire number 32 in Oregon, presented by the Pacific Northwest Family Circle. You can see it on Facebook. And I look forward to seeing you all in each month's vigil. And together, we can work to have some of the most powerful folks, the DAs, elected to be what we want. And hold them accountable once elected. We're going to have an election.
Before you go, let me ask you a question. So the DA is coming up for election in Portland, Oregon. That would be Rod Underhill. So
no,
Clackamas,
he's not going to come up again.
In Clackamas, there's no election for the DA coming up?
Not that I know of, but we still show up each month to let the public know, the county and to also give reverence and care. I mean, Christopher Kalonji was murdered by cops in Oregon City, and we need to be in solidarity. And it also helps us get out of being a victim to being a hero in community of other heroes. It heals us PTSD and learned helplessness. It helps us get out of denial. It helps us find new creative, courageous, effective solutions. So for everyone.
I appreciate you calling today, and I want to say that Edie brings up a really good point. So I said it was 3.5% of the population that is well documented that can overturn any government. I don't just mean a particular system. I mean 3.5% of the entire population of the United States could overturn our government. What does that say about us? Forget them for a minute. what does that say about us? It says that we might not be actively taking a part in civics. This show is about being an activist. And I know that many of us don't wear that label every day. We don't think of ourselves as activists, but you can write a letter. You can show up at the courthouse. There are many things that you can do. You can vote. You can help elect individuals that are going to advocate for your position. All of these things fit into the space of activism, and that's why 3.5% is such an important number, because it doesn't just include people who can be on the front lines. For example, at a protest, many of us won't feel comfortable being on the front lines of a protest because we are targeted individuals. We may be targeted by our color. We may be targeted by our gender, sexuality, or whatever it is that makes us different. We do have another caller on the line. Caller, you are on the line.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you. I was listening to previous callers and the previous shows, and before I forget, I want to just say something about the metaphor of holding people's feet to the fire. I take it this means the people who are creating an economy and a society which is harsh and cruel to many people. It's a metaphor of torture. And I was wondering, maybe another metaphor, like let's hold their deeds up to scrutiny and the results up to scrutiny, and you know, and then a large percentage of the population might be interested in what the effects are that are done with this. So that was one point, and then I just wanted to mention too that an old book put out by the Monthly Review Press back in the 1970s or so, called Imperial Brain Trust, talked about a very well-organized group of several hundred, I think they were often heads of corporations and very, very influential people, and how they decided back at the during World War II that the post-World War II world economy would have to be dominated by the United States. And this book, somebody would say, but that's a long time ago, and it certainly is. But I think that the influential, powerful corporate leaders, as everybody who listens to KBOO knows, are still there. And that's something that's worth concentrating on, is the economic factor is just one among all the ones we hear talking about on KBOO. But it's a very powerful one. But whether there's any leverage there, I don't know. You folks are much more in tune, and you're much more aware. I'm an older guy, so I just wanted to mention that, and I'll leave this
okay
for discussion. Thank you very much.
Well, I appreciate that, George. So George is making the point that maybe corporations have too much power. I don't think anyone would disagree with George at all. So we look at corporations like Amazon. They put smaller corporations, smaller businesses out of business, and they undermine the small businesses that do participate with them. And in addition, they don't pay taxes. What happens when we don't sufficiently support our social services, when we don't sufficiently support our schools, when we don't sufficiently support any of the services that we need that taxes rely on? So corporations have way too much power, way too much influence over how our government acts, how our government takes steps to make sure that we're all receiving what we need. So I appreciate you calling today, George.
Thank you so much.
The number to call if you want to talk about this is 503-231-8187. So the first question I ask is, alt-right, is that an appropriate name? Then we have the far right, and the other word that I've heard that's a counter that is a leftist. I don't know that I personally feel like a leftist. I'm not sure that that term describes me. Then we have other terms like activists. That's a pretty great word that means a lot of different things. But are activists just the folks that are downtown, maybe covered up? Are those the only kinds of activists? There are tons of people in this city working to ensure that immigrants, LGBTQ, disabled, other targeted black and brown individuals stay safe. I want to give a shout out to Don't Shoot Portland and the work that they've been doing. They're not downtown, but they've been fighting fascism for a while. How about the Black Lives Matter movement? A lot of attention has been put on masked individuals from Antifa, and they have their place in Portland. What are some of the other organizations that you work with or that you know about that are doing this work to change, as they used to say in the military, the hearts and minds? Because that's what we're really after. We're after the hearts and minds of 3.5% of this population to let them know that certain folks are not welcome in this town. The huge police presence, the millions of dollars we have spent to host people that make our town unsafe. What are we going to do about that? Are we writing letters? Are we just following along with the narrative, keep Portland weird, and that the leftists are causing many of the problems? That's what I see when I read the newspaper. Now, personally, I don't go downtown when these things happen. Like many folks who may have asthma, may have health issues, are in wheelchairs, not able-bodied, or targeted, I don't feel safe. Not at all. I don't feel safe that the police are going to protect me. I may be targeted by the police. I don't feel safe with the far right, the Proud Boys, any of those related organizations. I don't really feel like Antifa is the problem here, but how can we change the narrative that we see in the news? We've got Ted Cruz weighing in. We've got President Trump weighing in. I think that's the first time I've called Trump the president. And I've never done it before. It's the first time. I've called him number 45. I've called him a lot of things. I have been one of those folks that have wanted to see change in the White House. And I haven't seen the change. And I think now it's just time to say that we elected this man, not me as an individual, no. But we elected this man, and we should be held accountable. Give me a call at 503-231-8187. I do believe that this is driving a lot of the problems that we see in the street. So we have John on the line. Good morning, John. What are your thoughts?
Hey there. How you doing?
Good morning. Just fine. How are you?
Good. Great. I just want to make a comment about the protests downtown, Antifa, alt-right, whatever you want to call them. I'm kind of an outsider. I haven't really participated at all. And I kind of, my own experience in the past was back in the 90s, you had kind of a resurgence of like the neo-Nazi movement. And I lived in Denver at the time, and, you know, they had the guys out there with swastika flags and brown shirts and ties and the whole thing. And they, you know, I don't agree with anything they say, but they were just let do what they did. And then they just kind of sat there and looked kind of silly and did their thing and then left. And there wasn't like the reactionary. Unfortunately, I view the Antifa as reactionary. They don't seem like they stand for anything, but like, we don't like you. So it's like, how do you argue with that? Like, there's no room for discussion. It's like, we don't like you. You don't like us. It's like, okay, it's kind of obvious, but I don't see. I mean, for my opinion, just let the guys, the alt-right people, do what they do. Like, if they start attacking people, then it's obvious that they're doing the negative stuff. It's like, then it's really obvious, like, oh, like, the alt-right people are, you know, causing the problems like they did back in the 90s, and the Antifa people are just antagonizing, in my mind, creating a worse situation.
Okay, and so you bring
unfortunately,
up...
Unfortunately, the...
John, you bring up a very good point. You say it's obvious that it would be obvious that the alt-right is attacking people. My question to folks that are listening is, why isn't that obvious now? What circles are you in that you don't hear about the attacks that are made on LGBTQ people, black and brown people? I know of two people that were attacked about a week ago that are now looking for lawyers because they fought back. So I'm wondering, how is this message not getting out that they do indeed attack people? I'm not for doing nothing.
Right.
I am doing something. I am not a part of the group that you would see downtown, but that doesn't mean I'm not for pushback. So where do you get your news? Where do you get your understanding of Antifa from?
I mean, basically, it's just my impression of what I see on, you know, the news, online, just seeing, I can understand that, like, why they want to express themselves the way they do, but the way they do it is just, it's not productive.
Okay.
And I don't see it as, I understand that you need to protect people that are vulnerable, but I don't see that, from what I've seen, and it's, it's just my perspective, is like, I've seen them, they're the ones that are like breaking windows downtown. They're the ones that are like setting things on fire. They're the ones that are, they're obviously angry and they have a right to be, but I don't think it's a productive way of expressing themselves.
So, to my knowledge, at this last rally, the last two rallies, I have not heard about anything being set on fire, but I do know that the narrative on the news has very much been almost pro Proud Boys. Now, I have to say, in all honesty, I had no understanding of Antifa. I actually had them on the show. They called into the studio so I could get a better understanding. I was like of the mind, how about if we just don't show up?
Like, what's the problem? Why not just not show up? Let these guys do their
thing.
Let's
make fools of them.
They look so silly.
And I want to tell you what they told me. So they shared with me that if they don't show up, that the Proud Boys and some of the other groups find people to attack. Now, I did a little research on that, and I did find that indeed, even outside of those protests, just as I mentioned last week, there are people being assaulted on a regular basis, and that doesn't seem to make the news as much. However, I'm going to still lean towards saying that in the past, in the recent past, not in the last couple of counter-protests, the way that it has been marketed to folks is that Antifa is the problem. I think it changed a little bit with this last rally. We had the unprecedented band, which is a brass band that plays. Yeah. This time they dressed as bananas. They brought a little levity to the situation. And I don't really know how you do that, but they did it in the bananas. And it made it seem like it wasn't violent. And so the news had a really hard time showing dancing bananas and and dancers who are breakdancing on the ground as being violent. Had they dressed differently, you would have seen images superimposed from even different events at that event. It was hard to do that with dancing bananas. So that's one of the things that I think went right. So woohoo, unprecedented band, dancing bananas, the breakdancers from, I want to remember the name, if I remember the name of the dancers that danced and just put on a spectacular show, I will let you know. But it was hard to superimpose the negative that these people were violent while they were dancing. I think they got that right.
They weren't what I would call Antifa. They weren't dressed in black. They weren't.
They are Antifa.
They weren't. No, but the band wasn't. The band wasn't.
Yes, they are. If you would ask the band if they are anti-fascist, they would say, indeed, we are. They were organized. They were not just random. 27 organizations participated. Do you identify with the NAACP, which I am a member of? Do you identify with them being anti-fascists?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay. So do you identify with them going out and being part of the Black Bloc? Because you're talking about a tactic. You're talking about one thing that Antifa does and describing it as the entire movement. So we have to kind of get away from that. So Antifa does more than the Black Bloc.
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't consider, like, obviously the marching band, they're anti-fascist, but I wouldn't consider them the same as the people that are included in NAST and downtown and, like,
they don't,
people. So.
As far as I know, they don't participate with Black Bloc, but I appreciate your call. Got a couple callers on the line,
no
so thank you
Thanks.
For calling.
Bye-bye.
Hello, I'm on the line with, who do we have here?
Deanna? Whoops, somebody.
Hello there?
Still here. Hello?
Hi. Can you hear me? Oh, okay. So it looks like we're going to have just a second before we're able to continue. In the meantime, if you need the number to call in, hold on and give us just a minute. It's 503-231-8187. So I'm Rochelle Dixon. I'm here on the Radio Activist to talk a little bit about your brand of activism, which may be different than some of the things we've seen recently with the rallies. Talked a little bit about Antifa, the far right. I want to know, should we even call it the far right? What would be the name that we should call the far right? So we have a caller on the line, Deanna.
Deanna, yeah.
Yeah, hi. How are you
Rochelle.
This morning?
Hi, Rochelle. Thank you for the show. I think possibly a little confusion exists because when you ask what should we call those people who show up, I think if you want to help people talk about this, maybe giving your own characterization of what each one of those names might be. But to move over to the last caller and the conversation you were having, I do think a lot of it has to do with the distinction between strategy and tactics, as you were suggesting.
Thank you.
So here's the point. I am 74 years old, and I'm an anti-fascist.
Yay!
Okay? Mm-hmm. But I want to know, if you're not a fascist, are you not, by definition, an anti-fascist? Is there any neutrality on this? I would like that to go out as a question. And the reason I ask that is because one of the things that I think people are not thinking about is they who do not participate in the standing up to the people who show up, I'll name them the fascists, and the reason I will is because I have a working definition or characterization. It has to do with what they espouse and what they stand for and what they actually do. So they are, in this terminology I'm going to use, and I accept that there may be other terminologies, they are fascists, those who show up, the Proud Boys and the Patriot Prayer and so forth. We who live in Portland, just leave it at Portland for a second.
Okay.
Who are not in favor of them or the things they say or the things they do, not just because we're not in favor, but because they represent a true danger to our community.
They definitely do, in my opinion.
They definitely do. We all who are not fascists are anti-fascists, I would say. Now, I hope this provokes some thought and conversation by those people who haven't thought of themselves yet as anti-fascist, because it's important to be informed, it's important to understand what's at stake, and departure from that, talking about this past time, the huge difference was, yes, that there were many, many people from many different organizations and groups. That's right. Right. And what I think we're pointing to is the response was strong, and this time it was very creative. Not that it hasn't been in the past, but this time it was very obviously so, and it did help prevent the news from taking the side, which unfortunately we know that the law enforcement in Portland takes, which is the side of the fascists. We know this. This makes things very difficult, and I certainly don't blame you for not showing up down there. I didn't this one time for that reason. I don't fear those guys on the who come in. I fear the police.
Well, I did show up one time. I showed up.
you're
getting that this might have not been a good arrangement. So, like some of us who are getting up in age, I claim to be 21, but the gray hairs are telling on me. And so I went downtown to take some pictures. I have a lovely camera, and I went downtown to take some pictures for an organization in New York that wasn't able to participate. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to help them tell a different side of the story and go down there and see what was happening. Well, I was a little under the weather, and I shouldn't have gone down there. But I thought it was safe, and I think this was before the August event where they had the rubber bullet that was fired at the woman. So I ended up getting kettled, and they sprayed some kind of pepper spray type thing, tear gas, essentially. I've got a little junk in my trunk, not necessarily the fastest on my feet with moving. And I realized, oh, geez, I can't do this. I'm not going to be able to outrun these folks.
Yeah.
And I'm getting ready to have an asthma attack. I don't even have asthma
this
tear gas here.
Yeah.
And I started coughing and other folks started coughing. And it dawned on me when we all three started coughing that, we had been tear gassed. And I felt like, oh my goodness. So I was walking toward where the police told me to walk. I didn't understand kettling. I understood that the police were telling me to do something, so I took the direction. Finally, I looked over at this police officer who was on a bike, and I said to him, and I guess my face said it all, I said, how do I get out of here? And he looked at me and my, old lady outfit, and he thought to himself, she's probably not a risk. And he said, this way. And he actually showed me the real way out. They kettled the rest of these individuals, and it was the Proud Boys and the other far right folks who had guns on top of the area where they were kettling us. It was not Antifa. But I want to say what was different was 27 organizations showing up. People have a hard time calling the NAACP a leftist, organization. They have a hard time looking at people in banana suits and superimposing that people in banana suits were rioting and doing all these things. That's what was different. The media narrative.
Right.
And they changed the media narrative by changing the way they would be perceived. Those dancers, the band and bananas. Mm-hmm. This is some of these things they've been doing the entire time.
Yes,
when they did the vegan milkshakes, by the way, I got the recipe for that. So if you want to go to their website and get the cashew cream vegan milkshake, they talked about it so much I had to have it.
I had one that day too.
Did you?
Yes, I did.
I didn't have the recipe, but I went home and I asked for it. Turned out the spokesperson for that event said that you could find it on their Facebook page. So you can go to their Facebook page and find the recipe. But they really went out of their way to be nonviolent and non-confrontational, and they changed a cashew coconut cream milkshake into a cement milkshake. So they have been doing
the media.
The media did. That's right.
Yes, the media did.
The media did.
The people did not. Yeah,
that's right. The way they've been portrayed,
with a policeman who said it,
has been unfair. Now, am I going downtown to protest? I don't think you'll ever see me down there. I don't know what it would take, but do I support the ACLU? They've been a little problematic on my list with the free speech, but I do support them.
Yeah.
Do I support the NAACP? Yes, I do. Do I support the Unprecedented Band? Yes, I do. I support the Dancing Bananas. I support all of those folks, but you're not going to see me down there because of the violence that has happened because of the police and also because of the Nazis that are coming, because I too want to call them what I think they are, Nazis and fascists. I don't know what this right is. I haven't, what's the alternative right? Let's start calling them the alternative wrong or something. There's got to be another name for them. So I appreciate your thoughts. And what was that question again? Because I want to pose that and see.
Well, I wanted to ask, Portland, generally, people, if you're not a fascist, are you not, by definition, an anti-fascist? Are you not against fascism? And so the next thing I wanted to just finish with, and then I'll get off the line, Rochelle, is Antifa is the name of a particular group of anti-fascists, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's okay to make that clear. And they may have tactics that are not comfortable for everyone. However, their purpose and their dedication is the protection of the entire community, including everyone. They may be, and I'm just going to use this word, someone can disagree, willing to use whatever self-defense tactics are necessary to protect someone from getting hurt, including themselves. And that may not be comfortable for 90% of Portlanders. Does that mean we should say they are wrong? No, I don't believe so. If you're an anti-fascist, you support Antifa. And that's my statement. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for calling in. So I want to kind of give a little bit of the history of anti-fascism. So anti-fascism is opposition to fascists, ideologies, groups, and individuals. So that would mean, just as the caller just stated, that you are, by definition, anti-fascist if you oppose those groups. You may not be a member, or you may not be affiliated, not member, of Antifa. Now, I want to ask you, do you consider the NAACP anti-fascist? What organizations do you consider anti-fascist? Are political parties anti-fascist? What are you saying if you're not anti-fascist? I am so happy that the NAACP participated in this last event. I have a caller on the line. So caller, what would you like to say?
Hi, my name is Micah. I'm a child of the 90s. I was there at the rally, and I was an independent person. I didn't want to join one side or the other. I just wanted to observe. And when the topic of conversation comes to who's a fascist and who's an anti-fascist, I genuinely felt like a lot of the people who were at the Proud Boy rally there for that cause, for that reason, were not fascists. That they were also, if we're just saying, if you're not fascist, what are you? An anti-fascist, then a lot of the people that I met there were anti-fascist. Now, that is the basis of what I judge by their acts, their deeds, their words. Now, are these people the same people they are behind closed doors? I don't know. But what I saw was a lot of people going out
there. Okay, let me ask you a question. Why don't you know? What is it? How can you make that statement without knowing what they do? So you're not aware of the Proud Boys? Now, I can Google and read some of the stuff for you. You want me to tell you what they actually do?
I can tell you what they actually did at the rally when I was there, when I spent all
So if you don't see it, you don't think that black and brown people and LGBTQ people and disabled people know their own story. So are you telling me that I don't know my own story? Because I rarely get offended, but I'm about to get offended. Because I'm thinking, yeah, I know how I've been treated. And if you don't see it, does that mean I'm not a good person to tell you what's happening to me or my experience? Are you saying that my experience is invalid because you haven't seen it?
I don't know your experience.
I know. Really... But are you saying
so
that
my, the basis of what I'm trying to say is that I'm gay, that I'm a person of color, and that I spent a lot of time on the Antifa side of the protest, the rally, and a lot of the rhetoric that I heard was just like a lot of hateful stuff, and it's against rightful stuff that should not be loved. It should be rebelled against. I'm not for hate, I'm not for violence, and we should rebel if violence is necessary. But what I saw when I went to the other side of the rally was that people were saying, hey, look, if we get attacked, don't fight back. Take an ass whooping and don't fight back, because we have to have a right to make a stand.
So
what I saw,
I want to say that I think that the Southern Poverty Law Center that declared the Proud Boys a fascist group. Their research, I think, is spot on. I'd like to maybe send you there to take a look at some of the things that they've done. They actually do promote violence, and they've promoted violence in the past. The fact that they are using a marketing tactic and a strategy to win lawsuits when they provoke violence,
let me wonder about this. Are we any better than the same people who are saying, well, some people crossing the border might be good people? Are we any better than those people who would be so judgmental that we're going to label an entire group of people? I think the people that I met at the rally were there for a cause. I don't know what those people do behind closed doors. What I saw was a lot of peaceful protests, and here's also what I saw. When I stayed after the Proud Boy rally left and I went back to the Antifa side, people were just being so antagonistic, so provocative. I saw a young person try to grab behind the vest of a police officer. That person is the person that got their head bounced off the sidewalk because they were trying to grab a police officer. And
I unfortunately wasn't there to see that, but what I can say when you asked me...
I was. Ask me a question about the people who ganged up on a tattooed man who is peacefully sitting there...
Let me answer your first question. You ask if I am any better or if we are any better by labeling folks. And I would say, yes, I'm going to say, yes, I'm better. I'm going to say that my activities through the past of my life, everything from feeding the houseless to taking care of immigrant children, refugee children, my building up the community has made me a person that is invested in this community enough to say that I don't want people spending down our funds with the police and with the violence. I want everyone to be able to go downtown to shop those vendors, those small businesses that lost millions because of the violence. I want people who don't live here to stay wherever they are with their hate. I think we can get along just fine without having to be forced out into the street to counter these folks. Now, maybe I've got some age on you and I can tell you what it looked like before Portland police, and I'm so happy to say this because we haven't always had the support of the police department, before they ran those skinheads and neo-Nazis out of town. And I think they ought to do the same thing. Why they don't have the will to do it this time, but I am not sure.
Don't label everyone the same thing. Label the Nazis the Nazis. But just because some people showed up and they were on that rally and they were supporting freedom of speech,
I think they've labeled themselves. I just watched what they do.
So here's one example. There was an interviewer who was for Vice, and they were being interviewed. They had a great conversation with one of the Proud Boy rally protesters. It's very civil, but you know what I saw was really disturbing? I saw a person live streaming it, and in the live stream comments, people were saying all this incredibly hateful, toxic, racist.
Oh, I see that a lot. Just read the Oregonian comment section. Anytime a black or brown or mentally ill person is murdered, the comment section will make you cry. Thank you so much for calling today. Gonna have to leave it there. Very interesting conversation. I wish we had more time today, but we don't. So I am going to end this conversation that we've had today by sharing with you my thoughts. They're similar to what we've heard a caller say today. If you are anti-fascist, you are against fascism. That's what that means. You may or may not identify with some of the groups that are anti-fascist, including Antifa. But I want you to charge yourself with taking steps to actively participate in your city to make sure that we're all safe. But thank you so much for calling in today, and thank you so much for listening. Have a great morning.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of PDX Short Docs on Sunday, September 1st at 6 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater.
Press the button, dude. begin.
PDX Short Docs is a 2-hour program of Portland-related short documentaries by local filmmakers. The first hour features several 360-degree short documentaries on virtual reality headsets. The main screening starts at 7, featuring the films Green Box, Palo Mesa, Speaking Out, and more. Again, that's the PDX Short Docs on Sunday, September 1st at 6 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Don't let Rupert Murdoch control your newscast. The KBOO Evening News provides breaking news about local issues, from water fluoridation to immigration raids. We bring you daily coverage of what's going on in Portland, Cascadia, and around the world. Tune in every weekday at 5 for the KBOO Evening News on KBOO, your community radio station.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Thanks for tuning in. Up next is Flashpoints.
From the studios of KPFA in Berkeley, California, this is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on the show, the multiple impacts of the Trump crackdown on migrant women and children and families. Also, what is the Enforcement Renewal Operation, or ERO, and what role does it play in the arresting and imprisoning of undocumented immigrants and workers? And we will feature our regular weekly segment on food and the battle to feed the hungry with Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs. All this coming straight at you. Stay tuned.